te Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Tan Niriksha Vararoha Swarupan Surya Varchasa Ajanati Patim Sadhvi Ashvinao Sharanam Yayao Sarupam Surya Varchasa Ajanati Parisadvi Ashvina Sharanam Yaya Tan unto them Nidikshya after observing Varaharoha, that beautiful Sukanya. Sarupan, all of them equally beautiful. Surya Varchasa, with the bodily effulgence, like the effulgence of the sun. Ajanati, not knowing. Patim, her husband. Sadvi, that chaste woman. Ashvinao, unto the Ashvini Kumaras. Sharanam, shelter. Yayao, Tor. Translation. The chaste and very beautiful Sukanya could not distinguish her husband from the two Ashvini Kumaras, for they were equally beautiful. Not understanding who her real husband was, she took shelter of the Ashvini Kumaras. Purport. Sukanya could have selected any one of them as her husband, for one could not distinguish among them. But because she was chaste, she took shelter of the Ashvini Kumaras, so that they could inform her who her actual husband was. A chaste woman will never accept any man other than her husband, even if there's someone equally as handsome and qualified. So here in the Bhrigu dynasty, then his son was Shravana. Shravana's birth is very interesting. He was very fixed in the religious principles. Does someone explain this? So, Bhrigu's wife was named Puloma, and she was a very attractive girl. And when she was pregnant, then one day she was sitting in the ashram, and Bhrigu had gone out to collect some fruits and flowers for the puja and their worship. And then while he was out, then this demon, the Rakshasa, came by, and his name also was Puloma. Previously, then, the father Puloma, had engaged Puloma to him. But then later, seeing that it wasn't as suitable an arrangement as it was with Bhrigu Muni, then the father of Puloma then married her to Bhrigu instead of the Rakshasa Puloma. So then this Rakshasa was very disturbed with this, because the girl was very qualified. So then, seeing the opportunity that Bhrigu wasn't in the ashram, then he came there, and then he saw the girl there, and then he grabbed her. He had an idea that this was Puloma, but he wasn't sure. So, and no one else was there, so how would he confirm? So then as he was leaving the house, he came by the place where the Yajna was performed and the fire was burning. So then he spoke to Agni. He said, Agni, you always speak truth. So what is the name of this girl? Is this girl that was the one that was originally betrothed to me before being married to Ribu? So then, now, he didn't want to say yes, otherwise it would be a problem, because then Ribu would be upset and would curse him. At the same time, if he said no, it's an untruth, so it would be improper for Agni to speak an untruth. So after, he just didn't say anything. So the Rakshasa kept imploring him to say something. Then after some time, then he said that it is true that this girl was betrothed to you, but she was given to Ribu, and with proper rights, she then was accepted as his wife. And I was witness to that. So he was making the point that it is the girl who is betrothed to you, but she's not your wife. She is Ribu's wife. So he felt that he had done the best he could in the situation. So the demon, then hearing this, he became very enthusiastic. And taking the form of a boar, then he put her on his back and started running like the speed of mind out of the ashram, back to his place. So seeing this, the child in the womb then became very upset, very angry. And then he dropped out of the womb. And on dropping out of the womb, then his effulgence was so great. Then when he landed on the ground, the demon turned to see him, and that effulgence and his prowess and his anger just burnt the demon to ashes. So then the Paloma picked up her child and took him back to the ashram. And on the way, she was crying so much because she was so upset with this situation that a river was formed that still flows next to Ribu's ashram. And then the child was named Chavana, means one who dropped. And so then this Chavana, then he was very very powerful. And he was performing austerities. And then we see that this whole arrangement came, that he was married to this girl, Sukanya. So then we can see that in here, that she is one of the great examples of the nature of the chastity of womanhood. In that, whoever was her husband, she would take care. This is the Vedic training, is that the husband and wife, the relationship is based on religious principles. And these religious principles then give rise to a very deep understanding and relationship, much deeper than the modern concept, which is based on sensuality. Because the senses, one cannot go very deep with. And even whatever depth, it's very short. So anything based on the senses is going to be exceedingly temporary. And as time goes, the senses get more jaded. So the relationship becomes more and more less. But in the Vedic culture, it's based on the mind. And we can see attachment is so great. Even someone's not present or they've died, still attachment goes on. Relationship is still seen as existing. So the Vedic culture, seeing this, then established that a marriage between a man and a woman should be based on dharma. And in that, the exchange will be the most deep and the most useful or fruitful for their advancement in spiritual life. So the girls were trained that whoever they marry, they will then adjust with them and they will assist them in whatever they are doing. So they adjust to this mood, and knowing that the mood is like this or like that, because everybody's an individual, it'll always be different. So whatever it is, you adjust with it. And then one is happy. And the boys, they were trained that whoever they marry, they must take care of. They must give shelter, they must provide for them, their needs, whatever. So we see here that Chavana, even though, you know, he's old, and he is very fixed in his austerities, and because of this, sometimes he becomes a little bit overpowering. But he was thinking, okay, first he's testing, is this girl trained? Is she up to the standard? And then when he sees she is, then we see that he then tries to fulfill her needs, her desire. Therefore, he asks the Ashwini Kumaras that to please give him youth and beauty. Because a young girl, they're young and beautiful, and they're very attracted to youth and beauty. The opulence is attracted to opulence. We see Krishna is the most opulent, and he attracts Lakshmi, who is the form of opulence. So when a man is opulent, you know, powerful, beautiful, some aspect is there, it's very attractive to the women. So being old, then it was not much there to be attractive for a young girl. So he asked for that, for her, because she was behaving, she was doing her duties nicely, and serving him, and adjusting with his mood, even though he was a bit cranky. So he felt, now it is time to reciprocate and take care of her. So he made this arrangement. Then we see is that her, as a chaste girl, that what is the depth of taste is the relationship, not necessarily what you have, but is your relationship with it. You can have so much opulence, but be able to take no advantage of it. It is not an uncommon thing that you find some person dies, and then after they die, then, you know, either family members or the authorities, then they check into things to find out everything about it. They find out the person's a millionaire. And they died a pauper. I heard of one lady, she starved to death because she had a vow she would not break her last $1 million fixed deposit. She starved to death. A millionaire. So, therefore, you may have something, you can't use it. You can't take advantage of it. So, therefore, the thing itself is not actually what's important. It's the relationship with. What is the interaction? So, that's more important. So, for Sukanya to get just anyone who looks better than her husband looked, which is, you know, a great boon, especially she's from a Kshatriya family, so they have very much appreciation for beauty and prowess and all these different things. That is naturally. Well, the Brahmins aren't necessarily the most attractive. Brahmins, their purity is attractive, not necessarily their features. Well, Kshatriyas, their features are very attractive. Their features are attractive, their prowess, everything is attractive about them. A character. So she could easily, and then not only that, she could be married to a demigod. Right? So that means she would spend her time in the heavenly planets. But this is not as important as maintaining the religious principles. It's not as important as the taste of a relationship. That's much, much deeper than the taste of having a thing like that. So, therefore, this principle then we see here is that she was very intelligent. She couldn't tell the difference. She was not proud and thinking, yes, I am proud of my own abilities, so therefore I will figure this out. But she could understand she couldn't figure it out. How are you going to figure out some illusion created by the devas? They're much superior to us. So then, understanding that she wouldn't be able to figure it out, she took shelter of the Kumaras and asked them, you please explain to me which is my husband. You said I should pick anyone amongst you, but I should be picking my husband. So if you tell me which one's my husband, then I will choose. So this was then very much appreciated by the Kumaras, because this is the proper standard, is that a relationship is there, that relationship maintains. This is one aspect in the Vedic culture. What is established as a relationship, it maintains. It doesn't change. It may mature, it may deepen, but you don't change it according to the situation, which will be for you maybe politically prosperous or wealth or other things, because you cannot buy relationships with any amount of opulence of this world. No position, nothing. You may have the best position, but if you have no people to appreciate it with, what's the use? Arjuna was standing on the threshold of winning the world, but he thought, what's the use? Because the people that I want to share it with are not going to be present. Therefore, he didn't want to fight. Plus, I have my relationships with my gurus, and so that should remain that way. So we can see is that this is very high level of culture, right? We're not starting off here with, don't steal your neighbor's goat and don't bury your babies in the sand. We're not starting on this level. We're starting on the top level of human society. And so he's starting there, presenting whatever is the top that the material world has to offer. And that is the deep relationships of the religious process. And then Krishna is pointing out, this is very nice, but there's a platform that's higher, the platform of the soul. So then, this is the actual purpose of the whole system. This whole Varnashram system is to become Krishna conscious. How to engage the conditioned nature. If we're, means the conditioned nature has a nature. Dharma means what is something's nature. So to know Dharma means to know the nature of things. So if you actually know what is the nature of it, you engage it according to its nature. This is religion. So this religion then is actually all-pervading. Generally we think religion is some restrictions in certain areas, and that's it, you do that, it's fine. But the Vedic culture, the delineation of religion goes to everything. Right? Bhagavatam even describes the religion of the atom. Right? What is the size, how much time it takes, what is everything, whatever is there, the nature of earth, water, fire, air, nature of mind, of man, of woman, of child, dog, cat, bird, everything. What is a deva, what is a human? Then you know how to deal. Otherwise, how do you know how to deal with a demigod? Demigod suddenly appears, how can you do? Unless you know what is their nature, and you know what is the nature of a human being, how you can establish a relationship. Same, if Krishna appears now, suddenly, how are you going to deal with him? Unless you understand his position, and what is his nature, what he likes, and what is our position, and what we're supposed to do. So, therefore, religion is simply understanding how things work, what is the best situation, and how you combine these different things. Because you can combine anything. King and his guru, king and his wife, king and his servant, king and his general, king and his minister, king and his citizen, right? King and his senior citizens, king and a wealthy citizen, king and a powerful citizen, king and a famous citizen. How does he deal? So you have to know the nature of all those. So this is the meaning of religion. The restrictions that are there are simply for the purpose so that you are careful and actually sensitive to who you are and who others are. Otherwise, there's no purpose to the restriction. It's not there to give us trouble. If we don't acknowledge the restriction, means we are so self-centered and so proud that we feel it's not important to acknowledge others' existence, others' needs. This is the problem with the modern concepts of identity. Is I'm me, I'm free, I do what I like, but then that means you may disturb others in the process. Let us say, I love to yell and scream, so I go into the public library, and I feel it is my right to exercise my desire to yell and scream. But by doing that, then you disturb so many other people. So our right ends where others' rights start. So the process of Dharma is understanding what is your position, their position, and how the two match. Understanding this, that is a religious person. Religious doesn't just simply mean one is austere or this or that. That's considered very pious. But one who knows religion means he understands what is the nature of something, how it should be dealt with. Then you can say an expert means someone who knows the nature of the thing. Someone who's not expert doesn't know. So we see here that these principles then are for the purpose of understanding we're not this body, but how to engage this body in Krishna's service. The body has a nature, the mind, intelligence, ego has a nature. What is that nature? I don't know what the nature is. Right? Every lifetime we're born in some different species, some different situation. So what is that nature? We have to be trained. Then we learned, okay, then, okay, now you're a kid. So this is the nature of kids. Now that's an adult. This is the nature of adults. Not only of adults, this is your teacher, your father, your mother, your uncle. So what is that nature? So you're going to deal like this. Then you have nice relationships. Very nice relationships. If a child restricts themselves, doesn't yell and scream, behaves nicely, everybody is giving blessings and calling them, giving them things, and is very pleased. But the kid yells, screams, runs around, gives everybody trouble, no one cares. No one is interested in this child. No one is feeling some kindness towards them. So, therefore, this is the importance. So we see Sukanya here was very fixed in this, that she knew whoever the husband is, if she deals properly, then she'll be satisfied. Because you're only trying to satisfy the conditioned nature. The soul you can never satisfy with anything material. One should be convinced of this. No wealth, no nice situation, no prosperity, health, long life, pleasant situation, nothing will satisfy the soul. But since we identify with the conditioned nature, therefore we engage in conditioned nature. Then it is satisfied, and then therefore we can be satisfied and you can't get a better situation. Right? Like that. Then you can take that and engage that in Krishna's service. Right? Whatever we have, whatever we do, should be for Krishna. Therefore we take our conditioned nature and engage it in Krishna's service according to its nature. Engaging it according to someone else's nature is irreligious. Arjuna wants to go to the forest, be a Brahmin. He's not going to be a Brahmin, no question. He's a Kshatriya. He'll go to the forest, some Rakshas will come into the forest. He won't just sit there and be pleasantly eaten up like the Brahmins are. No, he'll get out there and fight. Right? Like that. He won't tolerate it. He'll act like a Kshatriya. So therefore, it would be irreligious. Because he is a Kshatriya in the forest, he can protect the Brahmins there. Plus, he shouldn't be telling the Brahmins what they should be doing, he should be listening from them. Then he'll be happy. So, this is the purpose, actually, of all these things. And so, therefore, the Bhagavatam is giving us these things in connection with Krishna consciousness. Persons who understand they're not the body, then are themselves giving example or giving stories of others who are exemplary that may or may not know, but it's useful in the life of the devotee. Means as a devotee in this situation, right, then one can take advantage of this. Right? It's a very practical point. If any of the women find themselves down at some pukur where their husband has been transformed into like a demigod and they don't know which one is their husband, them or some others, then this is the practical way that you solve the problem. Right? It's very practical. Whenever you have this opportunity, you just use it, apply it. So the Bhagavatam is here to teach us how to take the whole shastra, the conditioned nature, and use it in Krishna consciousness to attain to our eternal transcendental nature. This is why it is here. This is why, even though the Mahabharata is basically the essence of all the scriptures, after writing all the scriptures, then Mahabharata was written. And whatever was the essential point to be gained from any of the scriptures, that's written there. So all aspects of Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha are written there. Very clearly and very simply, easily to catch. But that's not enough. Narad Muni then told Vyasa, you've written this. So are you satisfied that now that you've given people a free hand for sense gratification and their other material desires? Because in the Mahabharata, you've described what is the perfection of religion and on the material platform, but you didn't tell what is the purpose of religion is to go back to Godhead. Is that why should people be pious? Why they should do all these things? Because they have to have some form in which to serve Krishna. And it should be something in which the basic principle of violence, envy, attachment, exploitation is not used. Because that's how the living entity got in the material world. Living entity wants to be the controller, wants to be the enjoyer. So this violence to the soul then is manifested in this world of trying to control, enjoy, exploit, Therefore, the Varnashram system teaches us how not to exploit, how not to enjoy, but how to serve. That's the whole thing. How in our position we're supposed to serve. The king serves the citizens, how the citizens are supposed to serve the king. The king serves the Brahmins serve the king. Like this. It is all these things. And not only that, how you have to take that and do that for Krishna. That you haven't explained. Right? So you have to bring out this point. Why? Service is the essential. Not service to man, is service to God. Or my child is God, therefore I serve. No, none of this nonsense. What we want is, we're servant of Krishna, and because of trying to be God, therefore in this world we're so rough. Therefore Varnashram must follow to make us gentle. Right? Here, she's referred to, Sukanya is referred to as Sadvi, a gentle and chaste woman. And so then, this is the whole purpose. But, that's not enough. Is that you have to do that. That is your tool, that's your lifestyle, your culture, in being Krishna conscious. That's all. You want to be Krishna conscious, you're conditioned. How you'll be spiritually Krishna conscious, right, with your spiritual form, won't happen. Therefore, you take the material form, engage in Krishna service in such a way that you do not disturb others. You help others, you support others. Your activities support their activities, and theirs support you. So then this is being given here. We see an example of the opposite of this then in the activity of Hiranyaksha and his wonderful older brother, Hiranyakashipu. That they were, they also would follow Varnashram, but only those parts they liked. The king is in control of everything he sees. And that part's nice. Everybody else should bow down to the king. This part's pretty good. Things like kings should worship the Brahmins, the cows, respect the Lord. These things they thought were unimportant details because the times had changed. Before when things were different, then these things were followed. But now in this present age of Satyayuga, then it wasn't important. Other times they had to be contemporary. Fulfill their own personal needs. It means what is their own needs and desires. They shouldn't, they shouldn't repress them. They should let them manifest and let them, just find their own natural level. And so then they did this. And they went around the universe terrorizing because they were very strong and big, right? When they were first born, when they grew up as tall as Mayur. That means from Earth up to Indra's planet. So it's, not small, quite substantial. So they became proud of this. And because of this pride, then we see is then they would behave badly. Then they behaved badly with, insulted everyone, behaved badly with Varuna. He's the most powerful of all the, in one sense, of the demigods. He's the eldest of them. And he'd go and insult them and go around and they would exploit. The earth is there. Earth is feminine. She's the mother. She's giving everything. But they would take things beyond what they're supposed to get. Right? I mean, it's what comes with easily that you accept. That what makes you have to go beyond. That takes out of one's, that's not for us. It's not, it goes outside of our endeavor, Krishna conscious endeavors. It goes outside of social restraints. These things to gain then created problems. So exploiting the earth, then the earth fell from her orbit. And then Varaha, then he came, and he lifted up the earth. So this we see is then he is giving that support. Means though there's difficulty for the earth, the Lord is giving that support. So so many others couldn't support, then we see Varaha was then able to support the earth and lift her. And then keeping her nicely, then fighting with Hiranyaksha, then he killed him. And then, in this, then we also see is that there was a very nice aspect that Hiranyakashipu Because a family is only pleasant if it's peaceful. And if you have persons in the house who are lamenting, then it is not a pleasant one cannot enjoy. Therefore, we see that he even spoke very wonderfully about the essence of the Vedic literatures on the nature of the soul and how the soul is eternal. It's not, you know, it is not burnt by fire, withered by all these nice things he told. So therefore, you should not lament. He has come. This life he is your son, next life he is somewhere else. All these different things he said. And then by hearing this philosophy of the Gita, then the women of the house, his mother, the wives, and the sisters, and daughter, all that, they were satisfied, and then they went back. And then he said, and after all that, he says, okay, now let's get this, let's have some revenge against the guy who killed my brother, right? Because he just wants the house peaceful so he can enjoy. He's not really caring for their spiritual uplift. So we see that these two brothers, they were the epitome of how to exploit, how to control and exploit in such a way that they would gain. Of course, we say, one could think, okay, well, they're big demons, why would they use Vedic culture? Because Vedic culture is the best way to make the material world work. You can't get better results out of the material world than through the Vedic culture. You know. But they would only use what they wanted when they wanted. This was then the religious. This is what Krishnamani describes, that one has a right to do one's duty. That is there, that is proper. But to think you're the cause of the results, to think that the results are yours, this is whimsical, this is improper. And then to not do your duty, this is impious. So we find the materialists, the demons, they like to use varnashram for their own purposes. So when they want, they follow it, but it's their result. And when they don't want, they give it up because they don't want the restrictions. Therefore, then this is impious. So this is asura varnashram. But daiva varnashram we see then as being performed for the Lord's pleasure. So this is what the Bhagavatam then is giving us. And here then through this nice story of Sukanya and Chavan and Murugan. Some questions, comments? Yes.
Lord Varaha is particularly identified with sacrifice,
yes.
The form of sacrifice, and when he appears, his body is described as made of sacrifice.
Mm.
And yet, you know, just this pastime we have, he rescues the earth from the bottom of the ocean, and I don't see how sacrifice comes into that.
Mm.
There must be more than at least meets the eye there. Do you know what that is?
I don't want to see. Do you know, is there, what is the pastime? How is the Lord of Yajna? I haven't come across. I just know that from there is that the you have the Yajna spoons, and that you have the small one when you pour the ghee and split down the middle. So that represents the sun and the moon, the two sides. And then it's the sun and the moon, not directly the sun and the moon, but the sun and the moon as the Ida and Pingala. It's the sun and moon in the breathing. The right side is the sun, the left is the moon. And that's then of the nostrils of Varaha. So therefore it's his snout then becomes the two halves. So therefore then it's like that. It's round with two sections. And then the big spoon, the shru, then that's shaped like his mouth. You know, because then the mouth comes like this. It's shaped in that way. And that's all I come across of there. But he is, do you know something?
Different angle. Swayambhuva Mata was complaining the earth had fallen into the Garbhagatic Ocean. Because it was his responsibility to populate the earth and engage the earthlings in performing sacrifice. Human beings on the earth are needed by the demigods for the sacrificial system to be set up.
Okay.
And
that's
to get the earth out of the recovery.
As Gopi Prana Prabhu mentioned that Swayambhuva Mata, being in charge of seeing that the earth is populated and engaged in religious principles, that sacrifice then maintains the whole universe. And then by that, when the earth fell into the Garbhagat, then sacrifice couldn't be performed. Therefore, the whole universe would collapse because all the demigods have their positions from being mana, those are those of the earth, earthlings. And so then they, so therefore he's saving the earth, then that makes him the Lord of sacrifice. So in this way then, he is also then, from his, after picking up the earth, then when he shook his hairs of his body, then that fell, and that became, where that fell, pusa grass grew. And then, so that was used for sacrifice. And so then we see this, yeah, that's, all this is coming from him. It's an interesting point just on this, is that generally it takes it, sometimes they take kings who are very materialistic, and to get them to perform sacrifice, they point out to them that you as the emperor, if you see the sacrifices going on, you're maintaining the whole universe. So they become very, yes, noble, yes, I will maintain the universe. And so then in that way they see that Dharma is going on, even though they don't care for another angle.
We tell that to the big donors.
Yeah, so see it in the Rajasuya. Rajasuya sacrifice, when all the kings were coming for the Rajasuya, they would give 1,000 of whatever they gave. And they gave chariots, there's 1,000 chariots, they gave deer skins, 1,000 of that, and this gold ornaments, 1,000. So each king thought, Yudhishthira Maharaj is able to perform this sacrifice because of me. Like that. So it's Vedas will use this. At least the guy is doing the right thing, though his attitude has a problem. Right? Yes?
In this pastime, I understand why Kanya is being praised. What I don't understand is why Chaitanya is not being chided. In our society, when a man reaches an advanced age, he still has an interest in young women. This is a very low character. So I don't understand why Chaitanya Muni is not being chided or condemned or something like that. I don't understand that.
Mm. So here it's because, see, he would have spent his life without getting married. He was performing his austerities. He was already an old man with white hair, wasn't planning to get married at all. But he has to be able to perform his duties. And then this girl, then she has poked out his eyes, so then it would be very difficult to move around and do anything. So he needs an assistant. And then in this, you know, some other assistant may come and go, but a wife would then stay. So that would be one aspect. The second aspect is how she was so insensitive. Because anything that has light must have fire. And anything with fire must have some life, you know, unless you can see that something's burning. So then naturally that means it would have been a living entity. So to have poked the living entities like that, she would have hurt them. So as a princess, she should have known better. So there needed to be some correction there. And that the girl was like this means the father hadn't properly trained her. So there had to be some correction for him. So therefore, then the arrangements were when he'd get married. And, yeah, so then, but as an old man, so he wasn't interested so much in marriage, but for her correction, for his situation. And at the same time, since she is a young woman, therefore he took this form, not for enjoyment, but for her pleasure. Means that she would be more comfortable. She's doing her duty, she's a chaste woman, so she's going to serve her husband even though he's old. But because she's doing this so nicely, then therefore he wanted to reciprocate by arranging in this way. So that's basically, it wasn't that he was old, it wasn't like Saubari. Now Saubari Muni, he was old and then he fell down, so that's considered not good. But then he resituated himself and then continued. But here, Chavana, it was a different thing. It wasn't his man. Does that make some sense? Okay. Anything else? Gratulat Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Janita Gaurava ki.